Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Abe Hamilton, Walker Wildman, and now we've thrown Steve Jordahl into the mix. He's a reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Steve, welcome back. You're here every day.
For another half hour of riveting it. No, do not turn the dial radio. By the way, I wonder how many dials there are out there. People aren't dialing radios anymore.
No, and I guess they do still have a tuner.
Yeah, but it's usually a button or digital something.
Yeah, it's life has changed. Like, what is the hanging up the phone? That was when I was growing up, you literally hung up the phone
and you dialed on a rotary dial.
And you dialed on a rotary dial.
I found an app on my iPhone that lets me dial with a rotary dialer.
Make the sound.
It makes a sound, and then it dials a number, and then it calls it.
Oh, it's my goodness! Cool. And then I would kind of take a look at that. Now, Walker, do you your generation, you're millennial? Do you use the phrase "hang up the phone"?
Yeah, I still do, even though technically I'm not correct.
Yeah.
Because you just, I guess you click on your smartphone, you click
off. You shut off. Shut off your phone, I guess.
Yeah, but I do remember my mother had a van, I believe a Mazda, that had a phone, a built-in phone, and it had the wire and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But that was high-tech at the time. Yeah. You could call people from your phone, from your car. And then the next thing I remember is the Motorola phone where you could play Snake on it. It's tall and skinny with the antenna.
Yeah.
Yes. Listen, in terms of the phone in your car with the cord, do you remember the little kid's toy that it was a little phone with a cord to it, and it had the eyes and would make little noises, and they could. I would actually take that in the car sometimes, and then pick that up and hold it up. When I'm an adult, it would drive my wife crazy. She said I'm so embarrassed, but I would pick that up as if I was. You know, a big shot with a car, with a phone in the car, you know, like I was driving a Porsche.
Ed, and did somebody answer that call?
Nobody answered. My wife didn't even want to ride in the car with me when I would do that. But I'd pick that up and go, hello, and pretend I was carrying a conversation. And I think it was pretty clearly a toy, but it didn't matter. So anyway.
You ever watch those? I don't want to go off on this tangent too long, but do you ever watch the movies from the 1990s where somebody the financial one was Wall Street, I think it was called, where they have the cell phones, these big bricks they put up to their ears. That was so high tech then.
And I remember Magnum PI and Tom Selleck, and he'd be driving around in his little sports car, and he'd pick up that phone.
That was a Ferrari, my friend.
A Ferrari, okay. And he'd pick up that phone, and now you look at it and you go, But anyway, all right, listen, so we had a little bit of levity. Now let's get back into the seriousness of what's happening in our country and in the world, Steve. We brought you on here to bring us down.
Yeah, well, no, actually, I've got a little levity to start the half hour out, and I've got a little levity if we make it at the end, too. So we can bookend this seriousness with a little bit of levity. So I know you guys talked about the International Women's Day.
Yes.
So two things. One from Canada, the First Lady of Canada, the Prime Minister's wife, Mrs. Trudeau, tweeted out that we should be celebrating men as well, because men who treat women with respect deserve recognition. Oh, she got slammed on Facebook.
And she's liberal. I mean, her husband's an extremely liberal prime minister.
I assume that she shares most of his views, but boy, she got taken apart on Twitter and the things happening there. So
that sounds unreasonable, Steve. I have a hard time believing. I'm going to try not to get myself in trouble here. I have a hard time believing that all of these feminists who are marching today, who left work and are marching, I have a hard time believing they'd be so unreasonable as to simply give a tip of the hat to the men in their lives who treat women with respect.
Oh, no such thing, I don't think. The other thing that's probably driving these women crazy right now, Donald Trump tweeted out this morning his support for the International Women's Day.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's
just
a poke
in the eye. I'm serious.
I got to look at this tweet.
But now I will say this. Now, obviously, he said some things in his past that were actually reprehensible. You know, we all know, we don't want to go into all that. But now he, during his campaign, seemed to have turned a page somewhere because he was very proud of his daughters and daughters-in-law and said he wants to see women succeed. So I actually think he's probably being genuine.
Well,
about the tweet.
I don't want to get into his head because the liberals will say he's lying and conservatives will probably say he's telling the truth. But this is what he tweeted. On International Women's Day, join me in honoring the critical role of women here in America and around the world. And then he said another tweet, I have a tremendous respect for women and the many roles they serve that are vital to the fabric of our society and our economy. So
you know, that's nice, but men get the shaft on all this. I mean, when do we get recognized? I don't mind having days, you know, for this, women, but...
This is my take on this, and this is where I sometimes get a little frustrated. You ever been to church on Mother's Day? It's all about giving roses, and let's honor the women in our life, and, and stand and applaud, and that's very good. Yes. What do you get when you go on Father's Day?
Man, a bunch of bums. You don't come to church.
Here's
enough.
How to be a better father than you already are. Because you're not quite good enough.
We have tapped into something here.
Yes, a bunch of guys sitting around complaining about our lot in life.
Lying about the celebration on Father's Day. Bunch of babies.
Since we're talking a little bit of levity, I just had somebody text me. This is somebody's tweet, and this is a little humor, folks, so please don't get upset. This has to do with the immigration problems and the policies that are being discussed, and this gentleman, I won't name him, tweeted, I live in constant fear that Trump will deport my mother-in-law, who lives at 1837 3rd Street, Louisiana, blue house. She gets off at work at 6.
Letters to Ed Vitagliano.
I thought that was a little bit of levity. All right, now come on. Right. Steve's enough levity. Let's talk about our nightmares.
Well, a couple of religious freedom things I want to talk about briefly. Two, in fact. One, if you go to it's at the top of the page right now at onenewsnow.com. That's onenewsnow.com. Go and get all the best news there. A photographer in Wisconsin is going to court to try to stop a Madison ordinance and a state law that appears to violate religious and free speech rights. And as you can probably guess, this photographer does not want to do gay marriages. The law prohibits creative professionals from refusing commissioned work that is contrary to their religious beliefs. It prohibits them from doing that. Amy Lawson, who runs her own photography studio, does not want the city or state to force her to take jobs that promote abortion or unnatural marriage just because she does business with entities and events that she can't support. Mm-hmm.
How likely, Abe, is... Is she? This is a woman, right? You said
it is a woman.
Mm-hmm. How likely is she in this climate, especially in Madison, Wisconsin, which is a very liberal city, mm-hmm. the home of a major university? I mean, is that within the pale? I mean, would you have to look at the? I think Madison was one of the first cities to have a non-discrimination ordinance. I mean, is she bound for rough air ahead?
More than likely, and I would like to see how they define commissioned work. That's a legal point, but this is the Baronelle Stutzman case,
right?
All over again, basically. And the Madison municipality has said, based on what type of job you've chosen, you have to do these jobs, no matter what you think, feel, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I know the attorneys who are representing her in this deal, and she has not been fined or anything by the government yet. But she's saying, hey, this ordinance is unconstitutional, and she's challenging it preemptively.
By the way, it goes a little further than Baronelle Stutzman. As far as I know, she is, this article that our Charlie Butts put together says, she is barred from posting on her website that her religious or political views prohibit her from taking these pictures.
Yeah, that is further.
She can't say
well,
why.
Well, that
she
is can't during the lawsuit or?
No.
Period.
Period.
She can't.
What?
She can't.
Yes. You mean even before she's taken the city of Madison to court? This is what the law said?
The law is saying that she cannot post her objections based on basically her biblical views. And I just to be frank, dependent based on the jurisdiction in Madison, I don't expect victories at the lower courts. But as it makes its way through the process, and it's going to take a while, she should prevail ultimately, just as Baroness Stutzman should prevail. But when you have a law saying that you cannot object to this type of work and you can't express the bases of your personal convictions based on your religious beliefs, that is a clear violation of the First Amendment. Yeah,
but now I gotta say this. I mean, the controversy over whether someone like that has to, you know, do work that is in favor of gay marriage. Well, we can have that argument. That seems,
and she includes abortion.
And abortion. So to me, that is a separate argument. That is that's an argument that's going to go on until it's decided. But this part of it, where you can't even post on Facebook, I would think even the ACLU would have a problem with that kind of infringement on free speech.
You would think, but what we're finding, what I'm finding, is that people who historically would stand for the view, kind of the old adage, you know, I don't support vile speech, but I don't support the message in the speech, but I support your right to say it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Historically, the classic liberals would defend your right to conscientious objections, even if they disagreed with your objection. That day is gone. Mm-hmm. That day is gone, and I would be shocked if the ACLU or other free speech, historically classic liberal groups came to the aid of this young photographer because they don't agree with the political position that she takes.
Well, the ACLU, I'm going to start calling them the Anti-Christian Liberties Union. What they do is they go to bat for Muslims who want their religious liberty, quote, in our country. They go to bat for homosexuals who want to force bakers to bake cakes and perform in same-sex ceremonies. But they're silent on issues like this, where it happens to be a Christian who's being persecuted. And it's really hypocritical, to say the least.
Well, we want to bring someone in now who's going to help us sort through all these issues and whatever other stories Steve Jordahl has for us. Alex McFarland, no stranger to our AFR listening audience. He's an author and apologetics expert. He's also co-host of Exploring the Word with Bert Harper. That's heard weekdays on AFR at 3 p.m. Alex, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm enjoying listening to you as always.
Well, Alex, I know you. I don't know. You may have been aware of what this. Steve, is this a Christian woman that this is objecting to?
Well, she does this on the basis of her faith.
Her faith,
so,
okay.
Whatever religious faith belief. So yeah. I'm assuming that she is.
I had not heard of this until Steve brought this to our attention this morning. Had you heard of this case? And do you, as you travel around a lot, speaking to churches and at conferences and youth gatherings, so on and so forth, are you hearing anything out there about Christians who are just now becoming aware of this threat to First Amendment liberties?
Yeah, and you know, I'm hearing similar things just on virtually a daily basis. As I think it was Walker I was hearing as I came in, you know, Muslims, militant secularists, atheists, gay activists, everybody's right to free speech gets defended except Christians. Mm-hmm. And let me just say this. Selective tolerance is intolerant, isn't it? And we live in a culture of intolerance to anything that speaks of moral truth or Christian truth.
And even Satanists, I forget what the locale was, they're demanding their First Amendment rights as well. Steve, what else we got?
Well, I got another religious freedom thing that, Alex, I'd love to get your take on this, as well as Abe from the legal perspective. This is a Wyoming judge who proactively said, made it known in her community that she is unwilling to perform same-sex unions based on her faith. Mm-hmm. And she got taken to the bar. Literally, and threatened with losing her position. They came down eventually, and they said that her conduct does not warrant removal from the bench. In a 3-2 decision, Justice Kate Fox wrote that, and I know this is going to trigger you a little bit, Abe, wrote that Judge Ruth Neely violated judicial conduct code, but removing Neely would, quote, unnecessarily circumscribe protected expression. she's being told that she has to either perform all marriages or no marriage. Yeah, so Abe, I know that that you had a visible reaction this morning when we talked about this, when they are kind of admitting something here, aren't they?
Yeah, they're admitting her expression is protected. That what even though you're a judge, your free exercise of religion is not curtailed. Now, it's no different from you have the reality in certain circumstances that you have judges that recuse themselves from certain matters based on based on what would be understood as the potential or the reality of certain biases. And I know we have the real issue that we're confronted with, and I know Ed may pick up on this, with whether or not we're going to comply with the law when we agree with it or disagree with it. But this judicial tribunal or panel, whatever, indicates in their opinion that, yes, she has the right to protected speech, but we disagree with your exercise of that protected speech, so that you either you will be forced to withdraw from participating in all marriages because of your opinion about homosexuality.
Well, let me just ask you one legal thing, and then Alex, we'll get your take on this. Generally speaking, I know you've never been a judge, but you were a district attorney in two fairly large cities, you know, New Orleans and Houston, Texas. So, but you're around the legal system. Generally speaking, how much freedom does a judge have to decide what they're going to hear and what kinds of ceremonies they're going to perform? I mean, if a judge said, I'm not going to do a ceremony, a marriage ceremony for anyone I don't know, can they do that? Can they just say, I'm drawing a line?
Yeah.
Maybe unfair because you never were a judge, but.
Yeah, well, legally, they can do that because all district courts, most especially in larger cities, I won't say all, because this is not the case in some of the smaller cities, but in larger cities, all district courts have multiple judges in that one court. Like you say, whatever district court, you have multiple judges. And so that exists because situations arise where judges have to recuse themselves for various reasons, legally and whatever. And so when that does happen, then the case would just go to the next judge on the court.
Right.
And so if you have a situation like this, and this is new because there was no such thing as the Obergefell versus Hodges decision before 2015, there were cases consistently where judges would say, I can't handle those types of cases, or I won't do these types of things. And you even had, like, this is not a directly related deal, but you have some locales across the country that would treat DWI cases in a certain way, where some district attorney's office would say, we'll do diversions. Some judges would say, I'm not honoring that in my court. So if you want to do diversions, you have to find another court to do that in. And that happens on a regular basis.
Hi, Alex McFarland here. Abe, I've got a question for you. Natural law, you know, it would be it would seem logical that, all judges and all courts would recognize that our nation and certainly our judiciary has been based on recognition of natural law or self-evident truth. Homosexuality, homosexual acts, and certainly the concept of homosexual marriage would violate natural law. In the legal realm, Abe, are you hearing any legal experts that are invoking natural law? Because natural law and religion are two different things. And you know, if we stand up for biblical truth, they say, oh, well, you're violating the First Amendment. Could we get around the objection of violation of the First Amendment about the Establishment Clause by talking about natural law? Are you hearing anybody talk about that?
I can tell you, Alex, that's an extreme minority position amongst legal minds, judiciaries, and again amongst lawyers. And I'll tell you why. The very concept of natural law has been marginalized in America's law schools. And so you have this kind of groupthink that has been multi-generational in terms of the legal community, that natural law is, to refer to natural law would almost make you a laughingstock.
But you know, did they realize that all of our founding fathers would have believed in natural law? And I mean, this goes all the way back to Augustine.
I'll just give you one example. Richard Posner on the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, who says it's a complete waste of time to study the Constitution, the amendments, the founding fathers, the history of our Bill of Rights. The Constitution is what we say it is.
Well, and all of that about our founders, Alex, was rejected over 100 years ago by secular progressives, and as they began to reject. I mean, they clearly stated, we reject the Founding Fathers. Mm. We reject the sentiments of the Declaration of Independence. In fact, they go so far as to say there is no such thing as human nature. Hmm. I mean, they across the board, they said, we are born a blank slate, so there is no human nature. What we become is what we are taught and what society tells us to think. And that's why they continually push to get children at earlier and earlier ages in terms of the public school system. All this was changed in the early parts of the 1900s, and they took over the law schools. This is just clearly laid out by history. They took over the law schools. That's why it took about 30 or 40 years for these kinds of bizarre Supreme Court decisions to start getting handed down. 1947, the first decision that attacked basically our concept of what they considered separation of church and state. It took a while for the law schools, for the lawyers to be trained, for those lawyers to become judges, for those judges to go up the ladder and finally make it to the highest courts in the land. They reject natural law. They reject human nature.
I have a question for Alex along this line. Alex, you talk to a whole lot of millennials. I'm wondering, because we're sitting in this studio, and unfortunately we're not surprised by some of these decisions that come down, limiting the First Amendment or the religious rights of photographers and such. What are you hearing from the millennial set when it comes to these things? Does the generation coming up after us understand how this important this is?
Well, they're getting there. I'm in fact, even as we speak, I'm on a book tour promoting the book that came out just about 5 days ago, Abandoned Faith, Why Millennials Are Leaving the Church and How to Lead Them Home. By the way, you know, we're already, in only 5 days, the book is at number one on Amazon in terms of books bought by grandparents. Now, I know that's not the world's largest demographic, but
it's also number one on books authored by Alex McFarland, I'm assuming.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Of millennials that are, you know, 29, 30, and younger, only 58% say they are absolutely sure that God exists. So, I mean, think about that. You know, conversely, 42% are not sure God exists. And even among those that profess to be evangelical, those that profess to be Christians, something like 64% says the church is judgmental, quote unquote, and anti-gay. And part of the reason, and we're alluding to this, but see, this enforced secularism, this militant enforced secularism is just trumpeted by the media, imposed by the school, and, you know, our new God, tolerance be thy name. I mean, this is just drilled in, and after about 2.5-3 decades, it's really starting to cause people to, you know, this generation, emotions trump everything. Feelings trump truth, feelings trump even science. And so we Christians, we've got to do a lot of discipling and a lot of praying.
Hey, Alex, we are out of time. I'll tell you what, next Wednesday when we have you on, let's... we're going to give you a little bit more time to talk about your book. These are fascinating findings that you reveal in your book. How can folks get a hold of a copy of your book? Tell them the name of it and where they can go.
Abandoned Faith, Why Millennials Are Leaving the Church, How to Bring Them Home. It's published by Tyndale and Focus on the Family. My website, alexmcfarland.com, or just any bookseller anywhere.
All right. Thank you, Alex, for being here. Abe, Walker, Steve, thank you for being here on the show. Folks, thank you so much for listening to today's issues. There is more great programming on American Family Radio straight ahead. Folks, keep praying, keep reading your Bible, keep your eyes on Jesus. He's the one who has this world in his hands. Bye for now.